of the various nationalities that came into being, you find 70. And that's why we are in Jewish law always accustomed to say Shivim Lashon, the 70 languages, or the Shivim Umot, the 70 peoples, although there are so many more. Based on the 70 nationalities that are here. Now, did the Bible mean literally there were 70? Now we find that, last week, as a very, very interesting remark, Mrs. Reibman came to me and asked me, why is it in Yiddish? Why do you use in Yiddish that expression, Sieben is a Liegen? Sieben is a Liegen. Seven is not true. Now, I didn't know the answer, but we were talking, and I said that seven is not a real number. It's just a sort of a round number, 7 or 70 or 77, a round number in the Bible. And the Bible uses a great many round numbers. Shouldn't take them literally. So then she came and said that since 70, that this must an exaggerated. So guzme, and then she said also that 7 is a guzme. Guzme means an exaggeration. So this explains why the saying has become a zibm is a ling. That means 7 is not a reality. It's not meant really so. But the idea of 70 nations, how about 70 members of the Sanhedrin, of the great Sanhedrin? And so we can go on and on and on. Great concepts in Jewish thinking and Jewish life was centered around 7 and 70. 70, which means 7 times 10. Yes, Rabbi. By all means.
I don't know whether you've discussed more adequately the Abraham story. I'm assuming that you have. I came in late, and it was a mitzvah that I came in late. If you want to know, I'll tell the group individually later. But next to the figure of Abraham, could you explain to me and to us whom you would consider the greatest figure of the Genesis story? And why? Or maybe you throw that out as a question to the group.
Well, the answer is given by the rabbis. The rabbis regard Jacob as the greatest figure. According to a rabbinic legend, the name of Jacob is engraved on the Kisei HaKavod, on the throne of God. That means that they accepted Jacob as the greatest of all. Although, when we read the story, and with that literal interpretation, he doesn't show himself very great at the beginning, you know. And especially when we read with the interpretation of the Goyim, and unfortunately, most of us use a great deal of the non-Jewish commentary, and they are very much biased in favor of Esau. Esau is the fellow that's wronged, and you know, we Jews, who are nasive. Esau is a bad one, and Jacob's. And you know, Jacob, his name was turned to Israel, and we are called Israel after him. And Jacob is the prototype of the Jewish people. As a matter of fact, the rabbis teach us that if you want to know the Jewish history, just study the history of Jacob, detail by detail, and you'll find that Jacob is a summary of all Jewish history. Kol ma she'era li Yaakov, era li Yosef, and kol ma she'era li Yosef, era to the whole people, the entire nation. As a matter of fact, there are some scholars who find in the stories of the progenitors of the Jewish people, of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, a summing up of Jewish history. If you read it, and you read very carefully, you'll find that you can you find certain outstanding events that kept on repeating themselves in Jewish life. Let's go to the Midrash. Let's go to the Midrash, section. Let me see. Midrash comes after Talmud. Let's see how fast they can find things.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's go to page 279 and page 280. Phil, will you please read the last paragraph of the introduction to the Midrash, what as to what the Midrash meant in the interpretation of the Bible? Midrash meaning investigation.
That's not on 280.
It's on page 277. So introducing the idea of Midrash.
The historical themes of the Bible are midrashically interpreted in such a religious and national sense that the entire story of Israel becomes a continuous revelation of God's love and justice. The Midrash has ever proved an unfailing spring with the power to sustain and strengthen the Jewish thirst for the word of the living God. Ever since the 3rd century, the most flourishing period of Haggadic activity in Palestine, the Midrash has represented an important medium for the expression of Jewish thought.
All right. Now, Adam and Eve, we'll turn to page 279. And Liam, would you like to read Adam and Eve very slowly? We don't have too much of it.
The world made for man, though he was the last to be created. Man's late appearance on earth is a lesson in humility. Be not proud, O man, for the gnat was created before you. When God was about to create Eve, he said, "If I create her from the head, she will be overbearing. From the ear, she will be an eavesdropper. From the neck, she will be impudent. From the mouth, she will be a gossip. From the heart, she will be envious. And from the hand, she will be a meddler. From the foot, she will be a gadabout. Hence, he created her from the rib, a modest part of the body."
See, that's what she should be. You continue?
The intelligence of woman matures more quickly than that of man.
That's what the rabbis thought of women.
Mm-hmm. A man is easily reconciled, not so a woman. The man must ask the woman to be his wife because he must make good the loss of his rib. When Adam awoke from his profound sleep and saw Eve before him in all her beauty and grace, he knew that she would seek to carry her point with man either by entreaties and tears or flattery and caresses.
This is how they read the Bible, and Eve became a contemporary. And some of these rabbis know from personal experience.
I like the use of the word intelligence here, where they say that the intelligence of woman matures more quickly than that of man, and you have used that word. Now, I read something where a man was distinguishing between intelligence and reason. And while the women may not like this, the difference is that intelligence is man or woman's capacity to manipulate things to their own ends. Whereas reason, an intelligent man can be a man who's never opened a book in his life. He may know nothing about philosophy or anything else. But he has the intelligence to use the tools which he sees, whether it is in business or whether it is in artistry or whatever it is, he manipulates them to achieve an end that he desires. Whereas reason is the highest form of man's human capacity, that of being a philosopher, of being able to compare phenomena, make deductions on a logical basis, and it's very interesting that you use the word intelligence.
Mm-hmm. I understand that while women's intelligence matures more quickly, man's intelligence takes longer, but it matures more fully. And therefore, he has a greater intelligence.
You, what's going on? You mean that then he can become the greater manipulator? The greater manipulator?
That's right.
Well, I think that the story of Eve proves this point very well. Who was the one who first saw the possibility of gaining something which had been proscribed. Who was it first?
The serpent.
The
snake.
Well, no. Yeah. No. Now, we may be just playing our words.
Pass, yeah, that's right.
It's interesting to see the word intelligence.
Get back to Jacob for a moment.
By all means.
In the book of Genesis, I noticed that you left out the entire section where Jacob's name was changed to Israel. Struggle with the angel and so forth. Could you comment as to the reasons why you felt that?
You see, I wanted, don't forget that my viewpoint, I had a viewpoint in front of me all the time. What is the ethical appeal that needs no interpretation, just reads itself and everybody can read it without any commentary, without any Rashi, should explain itself. Now, if I were to say, Vayeavek ish imo, and a man wrestled with him, you become mystified, want to know, who is the man, why did he do it, and who was he, was an angel? Maybe you don't know what an angel looks like, and things don't. So the thing was, it wouldn't be clear. It would block the reader, and it wasn't. So we left that out. The idea is, what is the ethical meaning of that? We assume that the idea of Israel, that Jacob had two names, Jacob and Israel. As a matter of fact, even when you read the story, that therefore his name was called Yisrael. You don't know why it was called Yisrael. And you don't know, and the interpreters still are fighting one another as to why. Is Kisorisi im El Vanashim Batuchel. You fought, does it mean you fought, you prevailed. Things are not clear. And I wanted that everything in this book, beginning with Genesis and ending with Rabbi Cook, should be clear to everybody. And this book should be a stimulant to everybody, after reading this book, to go back and fill in certain things that you thought you could understand now. And I do believe that a person cannot know the Bible unless he has a good conception of what was interpreted from the beginning of the Bible till the present day.
These
dreams and the Pharaoh's dreams. By the way, Pharaoh has also seven cows and seven ears of corn. And by the way, and Laban demands from 7 years. And by the way, why did Laban give him Leah in place of Rachel? Because this Laban is represented as an exploiter, a real exploiter, an exploiter, cheat. And he knew that for Leah, he could get, for Rachel, he looked at Jacob, and he saw that he was in love with Rachel, and he could get anything out of him. So he got the most. And seven may be an exaggerated number. Maybe more, but 7 years for Rachel. But he wanted to get as much for Leah, and Leah wasn't worth it. So he got Leah off, and then Rachel was still zum haben. So he got another 7 years out of him. So he got...
yes, Leah. Driving, because there is such a beautiful lesson to learn. I mean, the fact that he was able to overcome his, what shall I call it, the bad nature. I mean, he was able to strive and overcome that.
You mean his struggle? I have never had this interpretation. I never accepted this interpretation. It's false. It isn't so.
It is interpreted.
You see, that's right, because we don't know. And let me tell you, many, many generations will come and go, and the Bible will still have plenty of things to learn and to study, because the Bible is not all the way 100% clear. What was that struggle? You know, the rabbis explained that he was fighting with the Tsar of Esau. that every nationality has a representative in heaven called the Tsar, his minister, and it was the Esau fighting Jacob, and Jacob Esau. That was that struggle. And don't forget, when the rabbis read about Esau and Jacob, you know what they thought of? They thought of Edom. Esau meant Edom, and they thought of Israel. And you know what they thought of when they said Edom? That wasn't Idumea, that was in Transjordan. Edom meant Rome. They couldn't use the word Rome because they were under the dominance of the Romans, so they said Esau. Anything that they had to say against those dirty Romans, they said those dirty Esau's. And as a matter of fact, this went down to the present day. A Jew in Russia, if he would speak against those persecutors, it's about Esau of Russia. And Esau was a very living thing to him. Esau, when he read Esau in the Bible, that wasn't Esau that was some in antiquity. Esau was alive with him. And Jacob was himself. And he said, Hayodayim Yidei Esau. Bakol Kol Yaakov. See, Esau is always ready to fight. He uses his Yudayim. And all that Jacob can do is just cry. He's the Hakol Kol Yaakov. The voice. He took that verse from the Bible and applied it to himself, and it was real. And that's exactly what it was. Esau used his hands very effectively, and all Jacob could do was just cry. Cry to God, cry for help, and this became very real. This fight between Esau, this mysterious man represented Esau. And that was a sort of an introduction to the facing Esau. You know, he was going to face Esau. And the entire facing of Esau, the entire, with the gifts, all this meant really a summary of his history. He was doing it daily. He tried to redeem his life by just giving gifts everywhere, and by bowing.
But you left all of that out. I mean, even the meeting with Esau is deleted.
That's right. Because right there, the ethical value was not apparent. And the story, I took that story for granted because everybody knows that story. Everybody that goes to read it has had something about the struggle between Esau and Jacob, and the reference is made to it indirectly.
I noticed that the incident where Jacob, with the suggestion of his mother Rebecca, goes and gets the blessing, I mean, that is left out too, as to the how he pulls his father and gets the blessing.
Well, you see, I wanted to present a Jewish Jacob that's really good all the way.
That's what,
I left out certain failings that, see, I want to emphasize what the Bible approves of and what's good. And unless we find immediately, say, for instance, I have the story of David and Bathsheba, but because immediately we find that repentance. But here, the repentance wasn't so evident, so, and here was a book on ethical teachings. The reference is the blessings. You see, for instance, when Jacob talks to Reuben and says Pachas Kamayim Al Tosar, and the reason that he took away the first birthright from Reuben was because Reuben had relations with Jacob's wife. We didn't want that. Right here in this book of ethics. it was a question of Reuben committing incest. That's why he took away his birthright and gave it to Joseph, and Joseph became two tribes instead of one in place of Reuben. And then those blessings, that's wonderful poetry, but very, very, very unclear. If I would have it, it wouldn't mean anything. Because it's very unclear. I took everything that is meaningful, that is clear, that is not discouraging. And because, as I pointed out time and again, there are so many hundreds of millions of people who have resolved to study the Bible. They are going to know that book of books, and then they start, and they don't continue. Something happens, something blocks them. I'll try to move all these obstacles and let them get intrigued into this Bible, into this book of books, and then with the interpretations down to the present, and then let them be so intrigued that they go back and look for those places which I left out. I left the omissions to you. You can omit. Yes, the assignment. If you think that you have, maybe you would like to reread the book of Genesis and find some questions to bring to the attention, our attention next week, so you can do so. And next book after Genesis comes Exodus, and Exodus is a very rich book in story and law. The Exodus has the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are newly translated. They read much better. And then you have the Ten Commandments are followed by the laws. I would like you to take the book of Exodus, if you have time, in the JPS Bible, take the laws there and compare them with laws here, and you'll find that you get more clarity here. And then let's discuss those laws next week. And next time we meet, we can take that. And if you're ambitious, read on. Read the book of Exodus, which is not as long as the book of Genesis, and take the book of Leviticus along with it. Exodus and Leviticus, and let's discuss the Jewish laws that are the basis of all our Jewish civilization. And by the way, we speak of the culture of the Western world being a Bible culture. That Bible culture is really based on those two books that we are going to read in the next 2 weeks, the book of Exodus and the book of Leviticus. If you're ambitious, by all means, read this in the JPS Bible.
We had a few comments on how, or questions on how to conduct this, and I felt that we sort of stepped off the track, and we had a very fascinating, in my opinion, but a rambling sort of discussion. And I'd like to make a suggestion on how we can stick to it with a little. From what you're trying to suggest is running through this thing, and this is so meaty that I personally would like to take it step by step and take as much time like you did at the university with the Book of Samuel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, well.
A year to...
That's right. A chapter and a half. Yes, well. That's dropsy, but this is not dropsy.
Well, I know we have studied with Rabbi...
The only way to do that is not to have so many interruptions. We 50 people here, and each one may have a question or a suggestion or a comment.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Yes. Well, I'll tell you. You see, yes, that's a wonderful idea.
Why can't we read it at home and then bring it back and read it here? And if we have a question, stop there instead of going all over the Bible.
No, as a matter of fact, I believe that every person here can read this book by himself without anybody's aid. But it's a question of deepening the meaning of that reading. It's just when we have this discussion here, we are just more or less opening our eyes as to how we can deepen our own reading, and that's what we want. And we'll never exhaust the subject, and we shouldn't be too exhaustive. We cannot be too ambitious if we meet just once in 2 weeks, and we do want to have a good idea as to the entire book. And then someday we may go back to it, or we may start another book on the basis of this year. But this group, I do hope, will be something that will create history. if this book is, if this group is a success, and this rambling discussion is worthwhile, and if after this discussion some reading is being done and some investigation, then this book, this I'm sure will be emulated by other communities, and it will be a great blessing. It will turn out to be a great blessing.